Okay. Oh, hello, everybody. I am Chris Lee, and today I'm catching up with Felicia Bacon, who's been a member of Launch School for a long time, and then now is an alumnus. What's going on, Felicia? What's happening? Nice to see you, by the way.
Hi, Chris. Nice to see you. It's been so long. I'm so happy we're finally doing this video. Doing well. It's been a long time. So much has happened. So I'm glad to be catching up.
You've been working for about a year now, almost?
A year. Yeah, almost a year. Wow. I think March 1st would make my year.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, time flies. Time flies. So what are you doing now? Everybody wants to know. And you know, you're a famous person at Launch School, at least, you know, the people who were going through it with you. Everybody cares about you. Everybody is interested. So
that's so sweet. Well, now I'm a working software engineer and I work for Starbucks.
And what do you do at Starbucks? Like, what's the, are you allowed to say? I don't even know if you're okay.
Yeah. I got permission. So basically I'm on the server team for Starbucks. I'm on a team called, well, it was called OWS previously. They changed the name now, but everyone thinks I work on the app, like on the phones, and I don't actually work on that part. Starbucks is much bigger than that. I'm actually working on an iCab. So right now, if you go into Starbucks stores, when they take orders in the stores, they take orders on like this big computer type machine. And right now, I'm on the team that's working on bringing new iPads to stores. And I don't remember the exact number that we have, maybe 10 or more than that. But that's the team that I'm working on, adding new features so that it can still work like the old system does, but have more features and possibly expand to drive through. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I'm a 15-year gold member at Starbucks. I know everybody's like third wave now. And I like that too, but I also like Starbucks. And I'm always impressed by like the app. Just, you could just tell there's a lot of technology. Like, people don't think Starbucks or Home Depot or some of these like large retailers, Walmart, right? They're a massive IT and software development team behind the scenes to power it at all, right? So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's something I didn't realize when I first came in here. I didn't realize just how big Starbucks was, especially in the technology. It's kind of overwhelming.
It's funny, like, we know Apple. Like, if you say I work for Apple, people just think like corporate Apple, software engineer, whatever, right? Like, in Cupertino. But then there's like a retail, right? So you remember, oh yeah, that's right, you can work for Apple as a retail. But the Starbucks is like, you only think about the retail side. You don't think about the back office side, which is also massive, right? So are you able to say, I don't get you in trouble, so don't say if you can't say it, but are you able to share like what technology y'all use at Starbucks?
Yeah. As I can only talk mainly about the team that I'm on because, like I said, there's so many teams, probably thousands of people that I see every single day that I don't even know. So for my team specifically, our whole code base is written in JavaScript. So we use Node.js and it's a monolith right now. So it's really cool because my custom project was a GraphQL project and our code base, like I said, is a monolith, and we're currently in the process of splitting that monolith into microservices and putting that behind a router. And so we're using Apollo GraphQL. So we have a super graph and everything, and each of those microservices are going to become subgraphs behind that. And we split off one of them right now in our products, and we're trying to work on getting that tested and figured completely out before we start breaking up the other ones. So. So that's
JavaScript. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's like, and I say it's amazing because we actually cover that exact scenario in Capstone, right? We cover the Strangler Fig pattern of breaking apart monolith into microservices. And you're like experiencing, I know, because when we cover it, sometimes like the predominant feedback we get during that phase is like, come on, how realistic is this? Or like, when am I going to see this? And you're running into it right here, which is great.
Yep. Yeah, I'm one of those that ask those questions, like, am I ever going to use any of this information that you're just throwing at us constantly? And lo and behold, that's exactly what we're doing right now. And very lucky that my Tesla project had to do with this, because it did help me going into my job. I had done the Apollo GraphQL, I think they're called Odyssey tutorials. So I did all of those right before my job hunt, and my manager saw that. And so kind of coming in fresh with that idea already of how that kind of works at a high level. And so now that we're implementing it, it's more complicated than I thought, because there's a lot happening with the cloud and tests and all that. But at a high level, I still understand what we're doing and where we're going. So like I said, the whole thing is written in JavaScript, and we're in this really cool period right now where we are transitioning, or we want to refactor or rewrite our code base in a different language. So the first subgraph that we broke off, which was our products, was written in Golang. It started off as a POC that was written by another engineer on the team, just to kind of like test things out and see how it would work as a comparison to having it in JavaScript, because we had several issues. I don't know the exact details, but I know there was memory leaks and performance issues like that. So they wrote that subgraph in in Golang, and we already saw so many improvements. So we were thinking, okay, is there any other language that we could use that could give us those same improvements, just to kind of, I guess, see what else was out there, see if we could cover our bases and really make the best decision. So a few engineers on the team came together, I think four of them, and we got to test other POCs written in Rust, Go, Java, and .NET.
And POC stands for proof of concept, kind of like a spike, yeah, or a prototype, right? Yeah.
Yeah, basically a prototype using one of our APIs. And so they went through that process of building that POC, testing the language and all different aspects that we already do in our code base. And so we just actually decided, I think last week, which language we were going to go with. And I don't know, can I say it? Like,
it's up to you. You can say, from my perspective, of course, the more you share, the better. But yeah, if you're allowed to, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So we did end up deciding to go with Golang. I think because most of the engineers on the team by this time already had it installed, had kind of worked with it for a little bit longer than the rest of them, Java came second. And then...
Oh, wow. Okay. No, yeah, Rust came third or last, right?
Dead last with C sharp. I mean, well, yeah, .NET. So they both kind of were tied in the last spot. Okay. So
interesting. That was interesting. I know you were excited about Rust.
I was excited for Rust. I know that's a very popular language right now. The syntax looks a little wild to me, and I thought it would be so fun to learn it. But honestly, I'm so excited to learn any language, and I'm not very fluent in Go. I've worked with it in the past on the specific actual product subgraph. And even though I had experience with that in Capstone, or before that, actually started prepping for Capstone, I was still pretty rusty actually working on the product subgraph, because it wasn't just the language syntax that I was dealing with. It was actually, how do I get it to work with what I already have and to make it work with the features that we're trying to build. So it kind of reminded me of going through law school, the whole two-layer problem, learning the language and also doing something with it. So that made it challenging. So after working on the product subgraph for a while, I jumped back to my main team, back in JavaScript. And so that was an experience. Like,
yeah,
that's working awesome. In JavaScript. Yeah, jumping to Go and then coming back and then mixing the two languages up and then forgetting some of JavaScript. So I'm trying to ramp back up on JavaScript. And I think, I'm not sure the timeline and who's going to do it when, but I think we're all going to start to make the shift to Go eventually. So it's in the back of my mind to start kind of doing tutorials again and get back up to speed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just the confidence that you exude with regards to learning a new language, whether it's Rust or whether it's Golang, it's like, this is exactly what I hope for law school graduates, in that this is the confidence that you, that I hope that you all have, right? You don't exit this process thinking you're a JavaScript developer or a Ruby developer or a Python developer, right? You think of yourself as a developer, as a software engineer, as a problem solver. And whether you reach for this tool or that tool, it's okay. You can figure it out, right? That's confidence, that's freedom. And that's where, frankly, the joy is in this field, right? The joy of this field is actually not, kind of being scared all the time about expanding beyond your boundaries, right? It's constantly expanding your boundaries and being excited about it, right? So you're experiencing that. And back to what you said about the two-layer problem too, it's at the language level, but also it's at the system level too, right? Because if you didn't understand the larger goal of, solely like strangler fig pattern of like breaking apart the monolith, it's hard to know what like the specific task is facilitating. You can't also, like, this is why in Capstone it's hard, because like we're just talking about at a high level, like drawing boxes, and you're like, I need concrete, examples. So we can't do too much of that because of time. But now you have that background and you can understand, and I love that for you. Sounds like, you're experiencing like all the things that like I hope that one would experience early in their career, and it's gonna set you up, down the line for sure. But let's take a step back. I think everything you said is really exciting and just sounds like you're having a great time. And let's kind of start the story. Let's rewind the story a little bit. It's kind of like how you got here, right? Maybe just give us a little bit of your like background. Just a tad, like right before launch school and going through launch school.
Sure. Yeah. So like I said, I've been working for about a year now at Starbucks. This is my first career, my first job in the software engineering field, fresh out of launch school in Capstone. And I had spent about, I want to say, 3.5 years going through law school. So I think that's on the longer end.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. It felt absolutely like forever going through it, 3.5 years. Looking back, it flew by. But 3.5 years I spent studying. And before that, I was actually studying to be an architect. So I was in a completely different field. It didn't end up working out for me for financial reasons. And I just needed to find something else to keep my mind engaged and keep working towards something. And so I had found Launch School after doing coding tutorials. And I thought it was the right place for me because it was a place where I felt like I could take my time and learn really well, because that's something I noticed going through architecture school and high school, is that I, compared to other students, needed more time to learn things and process things. And noticed that I didn't do as well when I was rushed. And so I really wanted to do this career right. If I was going to change careers, I felt like I had to do it properly. And I didn't want to just do any other boot camp and just look for a job, because even now on the job, I still struggle with a lot of different things. Even JavaScript, I've forgotten a lot of things. I know now I can pick things back up, but if I didn't have the fundamentals, I know I'd have a lot harder of a time doing my job. And so going through law school really helped me to build that foundation that I needed. So yeah, it took me as long as it did, 3.5 years. Like I said, it doesn't feel like a long time now. It's still less than a 4-year
degree. You have to front load learning, right? Like if you don't take that long, then what you're saying is I'm going to learn on the job. I mean, that's pretty stressful.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's not like you spent 3 years, sitting on your hands, right? It's just, it's the repetition. It's it's growing deeper roots in your brain, making deeper connections. And even if you don't know the syntax, I tell this story all the time in that, like I either wrote or edited most of those books that you see on launchschool.com/books, including just the SQL book or something like that, right? You ask me a random syntax question, I will probably have to go consult that book that I helped write, to get the answer. And just like, I knew it well at one point. I don't know it off the top of my head, but just having known it at one time gives me the confidence to know that I can look it up. So much of it is that. It's not, and that's totally different from like not ever having known it before. To say like I can learn it well for the first time on the job, that's stressful. That's very difficult, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's so many things on the job, at least for my first job, that's all I can speak about, that are already stressful as it is, that I'm trying to learn all the time, every single day, that the last thing I need is to have zero context about JavaScript or programming or have any other mental models that you learn in law school. I don't know how I could do it. But yeah, I needed that time. I realized going through law school, having sacrificed certain capstone cohorts because I wanted to do better on the assessments, I realized that that was way more important to me than just finding a job and making money. Yes, money was a factor. I needed to find a job eventually to pay bills, but it was much more important to me to have that foundation because when I came to law school, I was brand new to programming. I didn't have any experience. And I knew going into the job hunt that I was going to be competing with a lot of people who probably did have experience, years of experience, who did have a degree. So I kind of needed to prove to myself that I could do it. And all I have was my law school experience to show for it. And if I didn't do that properly, if I didn't study well, if I didn't ace the assessments and reach this high standard that I made for myself, then no one else would see that. And who would take a chance on me when I'm looking for a job? And so, yeah, I spent a long time going through it and learning everything really well. And I don't regret it at all. If I had to do it again, I would spend as much time or even longer if I had to, if I could. Because
and you did all the optional stuff too. You did the seminars. We had like a C seminar. You did that. We had like a Python seminar. You did that. Right. And there was some other stuff. I remember you were doing all the optional things, which is wonderful, you know, which is great. And I think that's what makes you well-rounded now. And that's what gives you the confidence to go learn Rust or Golang or, you know, whatever it is that's in front of you. Right. That doesn't happen overnight. Right. That confidence like builds slowly, one rep at a time.
It does. I can honestly say that I was a completely different person before I started law school to when I left law school. In that 3.5 years, I think I grew much more as a person than in any other period of my life because I actually got to prove to myself and show myself that I can do this. And it sounds cliche now, like, you know, you can set a goal, and if you put your mind to it, you can do it. But I really showed myself that because my first assessment, my 109 Ruby assessment for the interview, I actually got a not yet, and that crushed me. You remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of tears in core. It was a tough time. And hearing you talk about all the stuff you're at work now, I'm just like, I'm having one of those like, you know, brain blown moments. Just thinking back, you know, from before, right?
Me too. I can't believe I'm the same person that took that interview and almost quit because of it. And I had several students, including Chris, to help me, to encourage me to keep going. But I did keep going. I passed the next one and I passed every single assessment after that. And I studied so hard and so long to the point where I was basically dreaming code. I could solve problems in my head. That's how well I studied each of the concepts. I remember in JS 225 or LS 225, one of those, it's in the front end courses. I had my heart set on a capstone cohort and I was this close to joining that one. And I knew I wasn't ready for the assessment, the written assessment. And I had made the decision to pull myself back from that one and to study, take some extra time to study for that assessment because I knew it was important. It was a long course and it was kind of a difficult course. And I'm really glad that I did because if I didn't study as well as I did to the point where I was dreaming about it, where I knew those concepts like the back of my hand, like I could tell you answers like that. Not, I can't do that anymore. I'd have to build up to it. But that's how I studied. If I didn't do that, I would not have passed that exam. There were some questions in there that I remember reading and thinking, man, if I didn't study that extra however many hours on that day, I would not have gotten this question. And that would have been like 3 points off of this one, plus a bunch of other questions that I'm not so sure on. So I already have that confidence towards the end of the assessment. Like, I think I got this one because of how well I studied.
You
it was
knew.
So
yeah.
Worth it. I just knew it. I knew it. And it was so worth it. Not making that counseling go hurt. And I'm really glad that I did that because they always say like things happen for a reason. I ended up becoming part of a cohort that I really love my team. I love the project that I worked on. And I ended up here. So it all worked out. And though it was stressful going through law school for as long as it did, you know, hearing from my family or insecurities of my own, it was still an amazing experience that I would do all over again if I had to. It was so worth it.
I think what I hear is obviously the financial pressure of like not working or working part time, I suppose. You can do that in the core curriculum. But I feel like I hear more from people's families giving them pressure, like spouses or parents, right? Kind of always going, what is this? Are you getting a degree? Like, what is this online thing you're doing? Is it a scam? Like, what, are you sure? and it's hard to explain, right? Because we're not an accredited school where you get a degree. It's not degree granting. And it's not a coding boot camp that you might read about where it's just like a burst for, you know, weeks and months.
Exactly.
It's a slow simmer. harder to explain.
Oh, yeah. That is so hard to explain. When I found law school, I didn't even think it was real either. I was like, what is this school I've never heard about that I happened to find just by chance reading this article in my newsfeed? I never heard of it. I didn't think that software engineering school existed online. I was very new to this. I'm from a family that is very like traditional, I guess, you know, go to university right out of high school if you're able to. I went to a community college. I didn't think twice about anything software engineering related or coding related. So I had no clue about any of this. And then deciding to leave what I was doing for years, I had spent, I don't even know how many years, 5 or more years studying for architecture.
Oh, wow.
To just suddenly leave that. I got my associates and I think I spent another 2 to 3 years until I had to stop. I had to drop out. And so going from that to something completely out of like left field, I was not a computer person whatsoever. And then like convincing my family, hey, I'm doing this new thing. I don't know how long it's going to take. No, there's no degree. There's no certificate.
We can give you a certificate, by the way. We can send a PDF over.
Right? Like, there's none of that. But I hope that it goes well. I'm going to try and see how I do. And like I said, I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know when I'm going to graduate. You know, people don't technically graduate law school. They just finish and move on to the next thing. So that was really hard to convince everybody, partly because it was kind of hard at times to convince myself that it was all going to work out in the end. But after going through it for a while, I knew I was going to finish. But trying to convince them and other people that this is a real thing, this is a real school, it's not a boot camp, it's not some other random online course, it's not a CS degree.
I wonder what they say now. Like, are they cool with it now?
I guess they're cool. The fact that I have a job now, making money.
Making money? By the way, are you willing to share how much you make or rough approximately? Or, I mean, don't want to put you on a spot or anything.
Yeah. I think the capstone average is still 6 figures above.
Yeah, we're above 6 figures. Yeah. About, you know, like 119 right now, I think is what we say. But yeah, just around the ballpark around there. Yeah. Okay. Just to kind of give people an indication, just because a lot of times, you know, just like YouTube videos are like, how I broke into tech. And I'm like, tell me how much money you make. And then And then it's like, whether, you know, it's important, right? Like, it doesn't have to be super high. It doesn't have to be six figures. But, you know, if you're making $40,000 a year, all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't know if I want to follow your formula, right? Congrats to you. But whether or not I want to listen to your story kind of hinges a little bit on that.
Right.
So great. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So making over six figures, or not over six figures, not seven figures, but into the six figures. And yeah, no one can say anything to you. And I think most importantly, doing well at work, right? Setting yourself up. You're the type of work where it's setting yourself for growth, whether it's, you know, whether you're making not six figures, below six figures. I mean, as long as you're being set up for growth and enjoying the work and feeling good at work, I think that's most important, right? Like, how do you feel good at work? You know, there's a survey about this, about job satisfaction. Like, what everyone says is it's about respect from peers. That's how you feel good at work. How do you get the respect of your peers? Competency, right? Competence, right? Work ethic. So can't hide from your peers.
Yeah, it's, money is one thing, but being happy with what you're doing and feeling like you are skilled enough to do the job that you're doing, that's the most important thing. And going through law school, I thought I was doing it for maybe my parents and my family to show them, to prove to them that I could do this thing and get through it and complete something as different and hardcore as law school and software engineering. I thought I was doing it for them. And then when I finished, I realized it was all for myself to show that I could do it. And I did do it. And now working, it does come with a whole set of challenges that I did not really expect. I know the other alumni and other people that have gone through Capstone have talked about it a little bit, but it's something that you don't really know until you get into the job. And I think law school prepares you for so much of it, so much of it. There's a huge chunk that law school prepares you for. And there's a chunk that you can't get unless you're working already. You just have to have that on the job experience and know what it's like. But I'm so happy that law school took care of that bigger chunk that gives me the confidence to do my job every single day, and the competency. Like, I wouldn't say I'm like the most skilled developer, programmer, coder. I'm not. I struggle a lot. I struggled in the interviews. I had a hard time doing the law school interviews because it would take me a while to solve problems. I know I could do it, but it would take me a little while. So the technical side, I still kind of struggle on. So at work, that's still kind of the same case, but I try to learn every day. I learn from my coworkers. I ask them a lot of questions. And I just try to learn as much as I can and get all the context that I need from the job. So there's a lot of like trying to form mental models that I think is probably the hardest part, or one of the hardest parts about my job, that I think is due to my lack of experience. So coming in as an engineer, this is my first job, my first year. And I struggle with that all the time. And I think having that respect from my peers, if I did not have that, I think I would have a meltdown because I feel like there's a lot of pressure on me to do well and to kind of know everything, which is impossible. I can't know everything.
Not possible.
It's not possible. I can't have all the context that I need to do my job after only a year of being here.
Mental models are the great leverage for knowledge, right? And that's what we force you to learn to establish in the core curriculum, right?
Yes.
Is help. Mm-hmm. We teach you, or we force you to come up with mental models. It's not only knowledge acquisition. It's using enough knowledge to bootstrap your ability to form mental models. That's the only way you're going to survive in this field, right? And your point about working with more senior developers, as a more senior developer myself, right, when I work with less experienced people, I want to see the light bulb go off. I want to see that when I make a suggestion, that somebody goes, ah, I know I'm blocked. I know what direction to go look. Versus giving an answer, giving a suggestion and going, I have no idea what that is. That's when, you know, you do that a couple of times and you're like, okay, forget it. Right? I'm going to assign this work to somebody else because, you know, this is a wrong work for you. You lack several degrees of context for this work.
Right.
That's demoralizing for you just because at work, you don't have time to just kind of keep backfilling three chains down. Right. So having strong mental models is super important because that is your leverage at work. When someone says something, you're like, oh, that's kind of like this. And you can generally map it, even though you don't possess the knowledge. Right. And that's super, super important.
Exactly. That actually did happen to me. It's happened to me so many times. I lost count actually with this job. And when I start to feel bad, like, oh, you know, I'm struggling or I don't understand this feature. I remember this part or these different experiences that I've had at Starbucks already working. And it's due to law school teaching us how to build mental models. But because sometimes you won't have all the information at your fingertips to build a certain feature or add this certain thing. So you kind of have to figure it out for yourself because no one can just really hold your hand and build it for you because you need to learn how to do it. And so I'm experiencing that right now where I'm trying to learn how to build certain features or add a new type to our schema. And I don't have all the context. There's so much documentation about these certain features and pieces that engineers know, and I don't have all of that. And so it's really hard for me because I want to pick up tickets that I know are a little bit more complicated and above my skill level. But if I don't go for it, I'm not going to learn. And I know that I'm going to have to reach out and say, hey, how does this work? What is this little piece doing? And then take that and then go study it for a little while and just keep doing that until you figure it out. And so that happened when I was writing code in JavaScript, that happened when I went to work on the product graph in Golang. I was learning the language and then also was trying to figure out the context of this specific product graph and how is it working in our code base right now? And how do we make it work in this new one, in this different language? And there were so many times where we were all just figuring it out. I think a lot of us were new to Golang, so we didn't really have an expert on it there. So we were just kind of trying to figure out how it worked too. And I would spend hours reading our code base and reading the functions over and over and over and comparing the two and trying to build out, what is this function doing? Oh, it's calling this other function. And then I would jump to that one, do the same thing. What is this function doing? Oh, it's calling this one. And then I would try to build out like a map of what is happening. And so then I would start to form theories of what's going on. And then I would say, okay, you know what? This is a theory that I have. I'm not 100% sure if it's right. So I need to ask someone now what they think or say, hey, this is what I think is happening. Am I on the right track? Is there something that I'm missing? Could you fill me in and, you know, show me what's going on? And there were so many times where half the time I was thinking, oh man, I have no clue what I'm doing. Like, I don't know. I think I'm just guessing. And then my teammates would tell me, you've actually gotten pretty close. Like, you're almost there. You just need this one little piece. If you had just gotten this little piece, you would have had it. That's actually happened a bunch of times. And it made me feel good. Like, okay, I'm not completely clueless. Like, I've figured out how to build a mental model just based on reading all this code and reading all this documentation. And I won't have all the answers to everything, but I think I can get close enough and then get the help when I need it. And that's happened several times. And it's built my confidence enough to the point where now I can pick up tickets. And when I reach a point where there is a little too much context that I don't understand, like for whole new features, I do what I can. I say, hey, I got this far, but I don't think I can actually implement this code without like serious hand holding or you know, you'd have to shout, I have to shadow you or you shadow me and write this code line by line. And then they pick it up. So it's kind of hard not feeling like I can do everything in a ticket. But at the same time, I have that confidence to know that I can get enough done and then have someone pick it up. And then they'll leave comments for me and then I can just learn from what they did and then ask questions. And then the next time the same type of feature comes up, I can actually chat on my own and do it again. So sorry if I was rambly.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, first couple of years at work, this is like everything's new. And so when everything's new, you don't have a large repository of mental models to compare against, right? 5-10 years into your career, you'll go somewhere, you'll see a pattern, see a certain thing. You're like, oh, okay, that's roughly kind of like what I saw over there. So it's this, and that's how, you know, we dealt with it a couple of years ago in this other project. Maybe we can try that same thing here, or we could try, a deviation from that. In your particular case, you have the repository mental models formed in Core and Capstone, which is good, but it's a starting point, right? And this and the real job for the rest of your career is to continue to build up that bank. It is not a bank of knowledge, right? It is not a bank of knowledge. It is a bank of mental models. And you know, ChatGPT has the knowledge and the syntax, right? We don't need that actually. And as you go forward too, there's patterns beyond technical. There's patterns like team behavior patterns, team organization patterns, organizational patterns, and mental models too, right? That is a huge part of the day-to-day and the work. So I did want to ask you what the day-to-day is like. Is this a remote job? Do you go into the office or is it fully remote? It's fully remote and your team's all over the place. Okay.
Yeah. So all over the place.
What is a day-to-day like, working on a remote team in the software engineering field?
It's really fun. So I live in Texas and Starbucks is based out of Seattle, Washington in the Pacific Northwest. So I don't know the exact distance or time out of Seattle, but if you live within a certain distance, you have to do a hybrid schedule, work from home, work in the office some days. Luckily, I work in Texas, so I'm completely 100% remote. And it's interesting. It's not really any different, actually, than what I was going through with Launch School. Launch School is 100% online. My work is 100% online. I'm used to having meetings, and we use Slack, slacking my teammates, hopping on huddles, things like that. So it's not really any different than what it was like in Launch School. It is different, obviously, having a 8-to-5 kind of schedule, and yes, making money. But other than that, not really any different.
We're doing the same work now. You get paid.
Exactly.
This is my hope for Capstone, right? And Core, and then Capstone is just like when people go to work, they're just like, yeah, it's more of the same versus like, wow, it's completely different. And the whole news, it's just like, I was kind of doing a similar thing. I love that. Yeah. I've been asking everybody this that I've been interviewing for the podcast, how much coding do you do in a day?
Surprisingly little, depending on the ticket that I pick up, if it's more code heavy, I don't write that much code. And my day-to-day, I think I forgot to answer this, but my day-to-day is usually I jump into work and I check my Slack and see any updates that there are in the like millions of different channels that I have, because everyone usually works 2 hours behind me. And so I tend to leave earlier for the day and they're still working. And then I come in the morning and I'm usually one of the first. So I just check that and see what's going on. I check my emails and then see what meetings I have for the day. If I already have a ticket that I signed for myself, I just work on that. If I have any questions, I kind of study the code, write those questions, and then message whichever teammate I need to message, and then just kind of wait for them to come online. And then that's pretty much it. Just having certain meetings, like stand-up meetings where we kind of go around the room and give an update of what we're working on. Tell everyone if we're blocked or not, if we need help, reach out with any questions, that kind of thing. We have refinement meetings where the TPMs or technical product managers will come to us and say, basically, this is the work that we need to have done. These are some new features.
Those are like your stakeholders, right? Would you say like the TPMs?
Like stakeholders?
Yeah, like your main, like your customers kind of. Like you sort of allow them to dictate requirements and things like that.
Yeah, pretty much. I think they're like in the in-between. They kind of articulate for us what kind of features need to be implemented for, and it's at least in our case, this iPad that we're building features for. So they bring in those details, those features. Hey, we need this type. And write these tickets for us. These are the different acceptance criteria for this ticket. This is, can we get an estimate on how long do we think this will take? And then we talk between us as a server team with the client team and the TPMs and basically agree on what we need to do, how long it will take, will it impact any other work, and then throw it into the backlog. And so if I already have a ticket assigned to me, yes, I just continue working on it. If I don't, I kind of browse the backlog and see if there's something that I can take on, if I can pick something up. If I can't find anything, I tend to reach out to a teammate or a TPM and say, hey, I'm looking for work. Is there a ticket that you suggest that I take? Because everyone knows, you know, I'm still pretty new. I'm one of the newest on the team at 1 year. And I think they know, like, okay, I can't do the very complicated work, but I probably can do this, like feature flags or building a type. And so surprisingly, I code very little sometimes. And I didn't expect that. I expected, you know, going to law school, I'd be like coding all day long.
Just typing out code.
Typing out code all the time. And sometimes it's not like that at all. It's more meetings. It's more meeting with other people on my team or other teams and learning about new features or things going on in the organization. It's about hearing, like going through refinement and hearing all these other things that are trying to be implemented and trying to learn about that so that you can, or I can build more context around me of what's happening and not just stay plugged into what I'm doing. It's, yes, we're building this feature flag, but for what feature? What are we going to add eventually? Because once that feature flag goes into place, that means we're adding this feature and adding, you know, more complexity and more additions to this. And so I try to get more context. It's sometimes meeting with other teammates. It's, I have a ticket, maybe I need help with it. And it's very little coding, but maybe it impacts like other teammates. Like right now we're trying to transition from, I hope I can say this right, but OAuth to Yacht Tokens, for authentication. It's very complicated and I'm still trying to learn it because it's a little confusing, to be honest. But we have team members on the team that are working on that right now. So we're making that transition. And there are some tickets that I picked up that had to do with this that took weeks and weeks and weeks because we would get it and there's like not really any coding at all. It's maybe we have these new endpoints in all these different environments, and we just need to test them, make sure they work. So we would put them into Postman. All I have to do is put in the body and put in all the correct headers and hit send and see if I get the response. And 9 times out of 10, I don't. I get an error. And it's this really weird, ambiguous error that doesn't tell me anything. And then I'm like, what do I do?
Because these are internal products, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you just got to go talk to the developer. There's nothing to do.
Exactly.
It's not built for external assumption.
Exactly. So I reached out to my team. I was like, hey, I keep getting this error. And then we reached out to my TPM. Hey, we keep getting this error. And it turns into this like trail of talking to a million people and then getting to the root of a problem. And it's like, oh, maybe the endpoint wasn't even ready yet. Or, oh, there's actually more issues that are going on.
Yeah.
That none of us knew about.
Life in the big corp, right? That's how it is. And I've been asking the how much do you code in a day question to a lot of our alumni in the podcast. And I think I'm triangulating onto a pattern where the larger the company, the less code. Because there is so much communication that's required. Because every change has an impact to not only the technical infrastructure, right? The different services that depend on this change that you're making to this service, but there's also impact to different organizations. There's inter-organizational dependencies as well, not just the technical infrastructure dependencies. So to coordinate all of those things is really difficult. And I don't know if you've encountered this yet, but like there's always somebody on vacation or out for, you know, for whatever reason, and you can never get like everybody there. Like it's very rare for everyone that you need to be in the office at the same time. And in the office, I just mean at work. Right?
Yes. That's a bunch of times.
Yeah. So it's just dealing with the human element of lots of moving pieces and dependencies, which is why all these companies, you have all these different components. You need at least two people on them, and just because of vacation.
Exactly. Oh man, that's such a huge challenge that you don't hear about, you don't know about until you're in the job. And maybe it is just my, I don't know. I can only speak about Starbucks, but that is one of the biggest challenges because it is huge. It's mind blowing how big it is in the technology industry, how many teams there are, how many people there are. Every single day, I see a new person in Slack. I hear of a new team. Our documentation, it's so much. And I've come to the realization that I don't think I will ever know 100% what's going on all the time. I think it's that big. Yeah. And I've asked this of my teammates too, because sometimes I message them and say, hey, you know what? I feel like I don't know what's going on this area, and there's just so much happening. And sometimes they tell me, you know, I don't know either. Like there's so much happening. I don't think anyone knows for sure what everything that's going on. And that makes me feel better because I can relax and think, okay, I'm not ever going to know everything. So just know what I need to know. But that is really hard because sometimes when you do pick up work, like the endpoint work, that actually happens several times where it's something as simple as validating endpoints. It took us weeks to really uncover what was happening. And it's completely out of your control at that point because another organization or team is dealing with it or something like that. And sometimes the TPMs didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And
that's not a dysfunction of Starbucks or anything. That is very typical in all the places I've worked. Oh. That is a very, very normal, typical, expected pattern. And what you're describing here is a very, in my opinion, it is the best work environment in that there's so much freedom. But it requires somebody that's self-propelled. You can't depend on others to give you work, right? You have to be self-motivated. Right. Like you get up, half your team or most of your team is not even awake yet. You got to just do work. You know, you can't be sitting around watching YouTube because no one else is at work, especially in a remote setting. You got to sit there, you know, study the code, as you said, dream in the code, right? Like, and really pour your energy into it and give it your all. And also, I think a skill that, I don't know if it's a skill, I think it's just a desire. You have to go look for work. You have to go. You have to know what to do. It's so unstructured that it's scary, right? But in my opinion, it's the best type of work. Because then you go and find work. You go and people don't stop you, right? You kind of push in whatever direction you want to push in.
Exactly.
A little alarming, especially if you're kind of new to work, period. That's an alarming maybe disorienting work environment. It almost feels better if like someone told you what to do, right? And it's like, this is due Thursday. And then you're like, great, I can just work hard Wednesday and do it Thursday, right? And then after you're done with that on Friday, somebody, this is due Tuesday, right? You're like, great, I have 3 days to do this. It's not like that at all, right? The best jobs, in my opinion, the higher the paying job, the more freedom you have. Good or bad, I don't know, but depends on you, right? It sounds right. Like you're doing well in it, though.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, the freedom is scary. And that was a weird transition going from law school. Well, yes, you're in a school setting, to actually working, because no one's sitting there telling you what to do. No one's sitting there saying, hey, you have an assessment next week. You got to study. There's work in the backlog. Pick something and do it. Just try to do it. And I got extremely lucky with my manager, with my team, because when I think about it, it kind of reminds me of my experience at law school. I had the most amazing people to study with, the whole community. Just, I feel like I have the same kind of thing at Starbucks. I have the most supportive team I could ever ask for. And everyone just encourages me to take on challenges, even if I feel like I can't necessarily do something or figure something out. They still push me to do it anyway, which is what I really needed. And I actually just got assigned a mentor. A more senior engineer who's been there for 3 years, who started as an intern. And I don't know if it's because my manager maybe saw me struggling or if they just thought it was a good idea, but I would come to my manager because I can tell him anything at all, and say, I'm struggling trying to understand kind of what's going on, or I'm struggling with this feature. Maybe there's not enough documentation, or I want to contribute more and pick up more complicated tickets, but I feel bad when I can't finish them. And so we kind of came up with the idea of, just pick it up anyway. Do as much as I can. And whenever I have questions, ask those questions, and anyone on the team is going to be so happy to help you. And I found that to be so true. I think this job would have been a lot harder if I didn't have the team that I did, because coming in as a first year, a software engineer, it would make my life so much harder if I didn't have a support system, because I have the confidence thanks to law school, but at the same time, I do want to have that respect from my peers. I do want to feel like I'm doing good work. And yes, I'm getting paid really well to do it, but I want to have that satisfaction like I did at law school. Like, I did something really well and I learned something, and that just means a lot to me. And
that story with your manager is so good, because it, to me, it shows like the fact that you just don't have an ego, that you're willing to be vulnerable and say, hey, I wish I could do more, and I want to do more. I will just contrast that to, let's say, me early in my career. That is not something I was capable of saying, because I came in very competitive, I would say, in that I feel like I was coached like this. So I don't blame anybody else, but I had a very zero sum mindset about promotions and things like that. And there, cause you're like, you're rated with other people, you know, you're your same level. I'm like, oh, that's my competition. Right. And so it was very much, like, I got to do a good job. I can't show any weakness. And that's such and I think I would have been so much better and had a better time. I had a great time, but I think I had an even better time if I, early in my career, I could do what you just said, because that is something I think it's easy to say and it sounds reasonable to do, but to actually do it at work is hard. And it also requires a lot of trust there. Right. And I know that for me, in my first job, I don't think I would have been capable of doing that, you know, just being so vulnerable, setting aside your ego. And it's something that I think over time, as I've matured more, got older and things like that, where I feel like I could do that now. But I think that's kudos to you too, right? And I think that's why people like you, frankly, you know, at law school too. It's just like no ego, always about like what, you know, kind of sharing about what you don't know, but actually behind the scenes, you know a lot. You're like actually very capable and you do a lot of stuff, right? And but you kind of lead with like your weakness and your vulnerability versus leading with like ego and here's all the things I know and hit people on the head with it. And I think that's your team reacts to that, right? You know, like people respond to the way that you are generous, right? And I think that's part of it too. And that's hard. That's a personality thing. That's your personality. That's your natural personality. It's hard to, but I think that's the best way to work. Now, again, as I've gotten older, I feel like that's the best way to work. It's not, again, I'll just talk about myself, right? It's not when I was younger, like going to work, viewing it as like a zero sum battle every day.
Right. I realize that it's much easier to just realize that I need help and to just ask for it. But I think that came because of the kind of team I have, the amazing culture we have at Starbucks, the team members that I'm blessed to work with every single day. If I didn't have something like that, it probably would have made it harder for me to reach out and ask for help. I wouldn't have the confidence to say, hey, I'm struggling. What are some ways that we can make this easier for me so that I can contribute and feel better about what I'm doing? And I think they are sensitive to that because they know I'm new. It's my first year. I ask them tons of questions, a million questions almost every single day anyway. So I think they kind of saw this coming. And even in my 1 year review, or not technically 1 year, maybe 9 months, I can't remember. But at the end of year review, I had so much positive feedback, such great feedback. But the one thing that stuck in my head when I asked about the critical feedback was the fact that my manager said that there wasn't really any critical feedback to say. There's nothing really negative per se, except for the fact that I apologize a lot to my teammates for asking so many questions and for feeling bad for asking questions, because I would think, oh, that's just another thing that I don't know and I'm exposing that to you. But if I don't ask, I'm not going to learn it anyway. So I have to just come right out and ask all these questions to learn about something that I need to know. And I guess I apologize so much to the point where my teammates are like, stop apologizing. You're okay. Like, if we're so happy. They actually told me, we're so happy you're asking us questions because it shows us that you care about your job. You care about what's going on and you want to learn. And that really meant a lot to me. So now I feel bad because my teammates come online in the morning and I have like paragraphs that I've outlined and screenshots.
as long as you're consistent, then every morning they can set aside an hour. They'd be like, all right, I can't book anything from 8 to 9 a.m. because that's my hour to answer questions for Felicia. So as long as you're consistent, I think it's fine. But oh, yeah. I think a lot of people actually have this concern, like, am I asking too many questions? And I'll just say there's actually a rule of thumb here you can apply to yourself to see if you are asking too many questions, because sometimes it might be you're asking too many questions. The rule of thumb to apply is, are you able to take action on their answers? If the answer is yes, then these are good questions. You're they're answering them in a way that it's helpful for you. And over time, you plug all your knowledge gaps. And it's one of those things where, like, haven't you noticed, like, in school, like high school or college or whatever, the people who ask the most questions are usually like the best students. It's just, you know, that's typically the case, right? But if you ask all these questions and you don't understand the answer, I think that is a little bit of a danger zone, kind of going back to my earlier point, right? If you don't understand the answer, and that's consistent, not once or twice, but consistently so, it's a mismatch perhaps of the tasks that you're given and your current knowledge level. And you need to go do mastery-based learning, right? You need to go do a little bit more self-studying, right? And to bridge that gap, exactly. Instead of asking someone else, you have to bridge the gap. So that's a rule of thumb. I think that can be helpful. But if you're able to react to their answers and you can point to a direction and it, you know, more often than not unblocks you, that's a good thing usually. So, and it sounds like that's what's happening. Yeah. If you're getting positive feedback on your questions, that's probably what's happening.
Oh yeah. And sometimes they're like, I hope I've explained this well. Please let me know if this makes sense. And sometimes once in a while they'll say, I am still learning this myself also, so I'll just give my best explanation. And please let me know if this makes sense to you. And then I can give feedback like, yes, this makes sense. This little part I'm a little confused about. Could you please clarify? And so, yeah, my team is really good. I can just ask whatever I need to. And I tell them too, like, this is so amazing. Thank you for clarifying. I'm going to bookmark this just in case if I ever come back to this specific situation, I have this question again, I can just come back to your previous answer. I do that all the time before, you know, I had to ask the question again. So in case I forget, I can just read back that answer that they gave me. And that's really helped so, so much, asking all the questions. And I've stopped apologizing for that, because I know that my team has my back. I know that they're not making fun of me, or that I don't think that they think that I'm incompetent. And I hope that I've showed them that I am capable. And sometimes there's some obvious things or kind of embarrassing moments. Like the other day at work, I was working on something, I can't remember, but it was an async function with JavaScript. And like I said, I don't code as much as I did in law school, so I've kind of lost some of my coding skills a little bit. And my teammate jumped on a huddle with me. We were trying to figure out this feature. I think I ended up getting it figured out anyway. But he asked me, what does the then callback return? I think that's the question he asked. And I was like, huh, I haven't thought about this since I had taken that assessment. I don't even know when. It's been so long since I even thought about it. And then I was staring at it, I was like, I think there's like two callbacks. One is called and returns something when it's successful. The other one returns an error. And this is blah, blah, blah. And I just kept going back. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like, I really need to study because I'm a bit rusty. And I feel like that I sound kind of dumb explaining this. He was like, perfect. Yeah, exactly. And then we do this and do this. And then in my head, I'm like, wow.
No, it should be like this, the shoulder. Like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, it's all in there somewhere.
Exactly. So like, I kind of was embarrassed when I was like asking for help, but I still had that, the launch school, like foundation. I knew I was like digging it up in my head. It was like cobwebs in my brain, but I was digging it up and remembering, and it felt really good. Like, oh yeah, I remember that from law school, kind of, not completely, but I can just go back and refresh on that. And
this is what we always say. Do you want to get pushback on your assessment during in law school, or do you want to get pushback at work with a colleague? Which one of these do you want to pay by studying, or do you want to pay with your reputation? Eesh. Right?
Right.
Isn't that a prime example of that, where if you didn't know that, or if you didn't study it deeply and you couldn't come up with the answer on the fly, your colleagues would be like, right?
I was like, man, I don't want that experience. Like, JavaScript is the language I'm most comfortable with, even though I am rusty with it. And if I had told him, I don't know what this returns, that would have been really embarrassing, because I do know, or at least I should know, after just having spent that long in JavaScript. And so I was really glad to come up with that answer on the spot, but I don't think I'd ever just say, I don't know, and be done with it. Like,
just like an assessment, right? The same thing on assessment. We don't want you to be like, just, I don't know. I want you to,
I don't know,
speak it out.
Come up with something there. You do know something. It's in there. You got to pull it out. But that was just a good example of, I can figure things out. It's all here. And if it's not, I can quickly go and refresh on this topic. I think that same day I went on MDN, I think, for JavaScript, and I looked up async functions and callback functions. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. Okay, cool. And then I just moved on with my day. And that feature, I think we ended up finishing and putting up for review. And that was that. And then I moved on to the next thing. So yeah,
that's great. You know, honestly, and it sounds like what you're experiencing here in your first year is very much what I experienced in my first couple of years at work too, which was very similar. I mean, it's not like all praise and all like positive, but it was very much validating in that, like, I was like, oh, I can figure it out. I can even. And when you're working in this like open environment, you're always working on something that you've never done before. It's never like, exactly. Oh, I've done this, so I know exactly what to do. You're always working on something new. And now you're going to do Golang stuff, right? Which is a brand new world again. But where you get confidence for tackling new work is just knowing that you figured out a bunch of stuff before. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Right. And just trusting that you can figure it out again in the future. And that's it, right? That's all it is.
Pretty much.
And you develop more confidence as the more validation you get. Right. And early in the career is the hardest because you're trying to, again, build up those mental models, build up the track record. You know, a couple years in, 5 years in, and so on and so forth, then it's much easier because then you can do new things with more confidence because you're like, I've done all this new stuff and it's been fine. Right.
Yeah. You have to build that attitude and temperament in like what you had in law school. The reason why I'm sitting here is because of law school. The way that I conduct myself and how I act in my work is because of law school. You have to learn how to be patient and put on that detective hat. That's what I like to think. I joke with my coworkers, like, I feel like a detective with a little emoji when I'm tracing through problems and I come back to the managers or engineer and say, hey, I think this is what's going on. You have to build that mentality because sometimes, you're working on a feature and there's an issue and maybe the manager didn't know who gave you this work and you're just trying to figure it out. It's all about just figuring things out as you go. You won't ever have all of the answers. So you just do what you can, figure it out. And eventually, whatever it is you're working on, it will be solved. Or maybe you'll uncover something that no one really knew about, like a bunch of the tickets that I had. And that is one of the struggles, is learning how to have that patience with yourself in your work. I think that one of the most challenging things is just reading code and understanding what other people have written before you and figuring out like what is going on in this like one chunk of code and trying to read that. Like, I can read JavaScript. I've written it for years, but it's so different coming from law school when you're reading this one function. It's like connected to tens and tens of other functions. And you have, we have a monolith. So we have folders and files and everything has a connection to something else. And it's like, how do you understand it all? And now it makes sense why we're trying to break it off into subgraphs to make it more manageable and scalable.
Turns out no one can understand it
all together. Exactly. Like, there's so much happening, so many features and so many moving parts that are trying to work together. And it's really difficult trying to get a full idea of what's going on. I'm sorry, I forgot the original question, but
no, that was good. That was good context. I think obviously, you know, the great thing listening to you talk about work is that you're super passionate about it. You get into the weeds of it. You're not afraid to get into the weeds of it and talk about it. And once again, just when you talk about it, it just demonstrates you continuously talk about what you don't know, which is awesome because we don't hear that enough, right? We hear success stories and how everyone's like tearing it up and doing great. But actually, they're going through the same process that you're going through, right? Except you kind of just talk about the stuff you don't know. But pretty much everybody goes through the same process, you know? I did want to just kind of try to wrap up the conversation here. We've been going for a while now. You said that you're going to hit your one-year anniversary here soon. And so just kind of wondering, you know, do you guys do, the Starbucks do year in review in like December, or do they do it at your anniversary, your job anniversary, or how do they do it? And I'm kind of wondering about your you know, plans going forward for you in Starbucks.
Yeah, I think mine was in December, November, December.
Okay, so everybody's in December, no matter when you start, I guess. Yeah,
I think so. Our fiscal year is October 1st, so that's when we kind of reset everything. All the financial stuff is dealt with, and I think our year reviews ended up being in December. For my 1 year review, it was really good. I had a lot of awesome feedback from my coworkers. I asked a lot of good questions. I'm very curious. I like to dig into the code. We even had like paper plate awards, and mine was, I think they called me the learner, because I'm always asking questions and I'm always reaching out to people to learn new things. And my manager was so impressed, I guess, that I wanted to jump on the Golang team, because there was only, I think, one person on the team who knew Go. That ended up being the person to write the POC. They ended up going on maternity leave. So that kind of just left all the rest of us to kind of get the subgraph going to the state that I need to go. And I was like, I want to do it. I want to be on the team because I kind of knew Go and I just wanted to do something new. So he was really impressed that I wanted to work on something that I had never worked on before in a different language. And then we had like a AI journey, learning journey that spanned like 12 weeks. And we had to build a tiny project and present it kind of like Capstone. And AI was a completely new space for me. And in any case, he was really excited for me to join. So much so that I was like, can I do the next cohort like a few months from now? And he was like, I've signed you up already. You're already in. And I'm like, okay.
That's awesome. This is just like launch school, like the seminar, you know, like semi-optional things that you can do. And it's all about learning. Gosh, what a great environment. I love that for you. And it sounds like it's the perfect type of thing. And I love the learner. It sounds like a Denzel movie, but you know, but that is such a, you know, as obviously somebody who's like working on launch school and all that, that is like the highest compliment, right? Just and just continuous learning. That's what this field is. It's a lifetime of learning. You've signed up for it. You know, if you really want to do well in this field, it's not about acquiring enough knowledge to make six figures and done. It's
right.
That's not it. It's literally you go forward and you now can learn anything you wish to learn. And and that's sounds like that's where you are, and great environment, great you know, you're taking full advantage of it, right? And it sounds like you are.
I'm so excited. I hope, I don't know the timeline or anything like that, but I hope I can move on to engineer, to senior engineer, lead engineer eventually. But right now I'm an engineer one, and there's so much to learn. I'm trying to learn as much as I can from all the amazing people around me. And I am lucky. I don't know. I can't speak for everybody else, but I got lucky with a company that really fosters that curiosity and drive for learning that I had at launch school and pushes me to constantly do new things. And anytime there's a workshop or any other learning journey, they're like, hey, we need people. If you're interested, do it. Just do it. Make time on your calendar. We'll work around all the work that we have and just go for it, because the more tools that we acquire, the more knowledge that we bring in doing this, it could help us with the work that we're doing. And I'm so glad they kind of foster that curiosity in us. And
lucky, but you know what, you put out a lot of positive vibes in the universe, and I think people see that. And so I think there's an element of, yes, pure luck, but also you create your own luck. You know, and I think there's a part of that too, right? So luck isn't always pure luck. It's sometimes a reflection of kind of the energy you put out too. So I know that's what caught my eye, and everybody else here at Launch School as well, you know, from staff to other students and TAs and so on and so forth, right? Everybody's kind of invested in you and cheering for you, and so happy we could catch up and see, you know, participate and see in all your success. I honestly feel like I'm a participant here in your journey. So
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again. Maybe catch up in a year or so. and thanks for coming on. Really glad we could do this.
Thank you. Can I make one more point about that?
Oh yeah, sure.
That you said about luck, because even my manager wanted me to say something about this when I told him I was doing this, and I think a lot of times that it was luck. Like, oh, I'm so lucky I got this job. Oh, I'm so lucky I got this team. And I was luck. And it was just actually like a series of decisions and actions that I took to get here that make it seem like it was luck. But it was all very intentional. And I didn't realize that at the time how it would help me. One step would lead to the next. And that was going through law school. That was working on my capstone project with my team. It was a GraphQL project. And I had no clue that that would literally jump me to my career. Like, it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It all happened for a reason. So we had a GraphQL project. We did all that research. And I loved it so much. I loved the topic of GraphQL and what we were doing so much that I was doing those tutorials, those Apollo Odyssey tutorials, preparing for the job hunt. And I had no idea if it was going to help me or not, but I was like, well, it makes sense that this was my project domain. I should know the topic reasonably well so that I could talk about it if I need to, not just my capstone project, but the domain itself. And that it just happened that on my LinkedIn and resume, my manager saw that. They saw that I had capstone experience with GraphQL. They saw that I did the tutorials and got the little, I think I linked like a certificate or something that I had completed for it. And he was really interested in that and interested in what I was doing at law school. And that basically got me my job. He was so interested. He reached out to me directly and he just wanted me to say that you have to be open-minded and keep your eyes open for opportunities all around you. Because sometimes it's not just like the technical things that you learn. It's about your connections and how you talk about yourself and meeting different team members and connecting with them in a certain way. And it's not really luck. It's all, I don't know how to describe it. It all plays a part in your success, I think. Not just the technical things, but learning how to speak about yourself, how to talk about your experience, and being a good team member and a person that people want to work with. And
yep.
That's how I got to where I got.
So much of your day-to-day isn't coding, right? And it's reading code, certainly, but it's coordinating, communicating. And I think there's a huge amount of people want to work with good people. Like, not just like the most technically proficient, right? It's like I don't need like the world's best programmer, right?
I
need definitely competence, high competence for sure. But beyond that, I need like good people, high integrity people, empathetic people, right? And people exactly. I can just vibe with, right? I like that's super important.
And
we're not going to argue all day. Right, like that's super important. And generous people, right? Because so much of it is Slack-based asynchronous communication, which can be misconstrued all the time, especially if you don't build a nice sandwich, the communication sandwich, which you can't do all the time. Be like, just write a quick sentence, which I do all the time, and I need the other end to just receive that in a generous way. You can't receive it in like, oh my gosh, that was so rude, right? So I think generosity is such an underrated skill or attribute in general, right? Just and you have that in spades, and I feel I'm not surprised at all people gravitate towards you, people cheer for your success, people try to bolster you up. Like that is not a surprise to me, because that happened at Launch School. I witnessed that at Launch School, right? I witnessed that in terms of everybody, and speaking of luck, I mean, there's a lot of hard work behind that too. Right. You're reaping what all the work you put in for 3.5 years. We talked about we kind of talked about it quickly in the beginning of this talk, but I mean, it was tough. I mean, I was there. we had a lot of one-on-one calls, and you had a lot of other, and you know, our calls were just a subset of your total calls with other people. And it was a, it was not an easy journey. But look what you can do now.
Oh, right? Yeah. Like I said, I'm not the most technically strong person out there, but I think I make up for that by just being curious and trying my best and learning as much as I can. And my manager wanted me to make a point of that, like, keep an open mind and realize that you're kind of more than just your coding skills. This whole thing isn't all about that. It's the kind of person you are, and instead of the person, do these people want to work with you every single day and talk with you? Like, do they like you? That's kind of more important than the technical things. And it's something that you have to learn. I think I learned way more, obviously, when we were doing the job hunt after Capstone, learning how to talk about myself and my teammates and the things that I do and be excited and passionate about that. It's all of that also that goes into like the job hunt and being successful. And yeah, that was my experience in the job hunt, at least, like for Starbucks, having a lot of cultural interviews. That's very important to them.
You know what people say, like the technical interview is harder than the job. And I feel like that's true sometimes, but only for the technical part. And so much of the work is actually dealing with people. So much of it, yep. Right? And
so much of it.
It just can't be underestimated. Enough. It's like PDAC, which is the problem solving approach we teach in Launch School. And you just keep zooming that out, right? PDAC for a particular exercise, you're dealing with inputs, outputs, et cetera. And then you deal with a larger infrastructure system. Now you're dealing with more complicated inputs, outputs. You zoom out to the organizational level. You're dealing with people now as your inputs and outputs that you're analyzing, right? Yep. The final code that you write is a distillation of the PDAC process, and the PDAC process there is working with other teams.
Exactly. Right?
It's working with other teams. It's not working with other functions or objects or classes. It's other teams.
Yes. Now. It's very people centric. Like, you can be the best programmer out there, but if you can't talk to your coworker, or if they think you're mean or rude or any other thing, then whatever feature you're building is not going to get very far. So you have to make sure you get past the people aspect of it first. Like, do your coworkers see themselves working with you and talking with you every single day? And if they can, then cool. The feature and stuff, they will build themselves after that point.
Yep.
But that was the most important part that I didn't realize until I went through the job hunt and interview process, which I feel like people really need to put an emphasis on. Like, even my manager, we joke about it because he was like, he had to tell me, like, don't sweat it when it comes to like leak code. Like, don't go, doing a bunch of hours of leak code.
Yeah.
It won't be like that. It's a different kind of challenge. It's a different kind of interview, but it's equally as important, if not even more important, to do well in these.
Yep.
So that was something I had to learn that I did not expect at all, at least in my case.
Number one challenge of running Capstone is personnel. It's dealing with personnel issues. It's definitely not technical. I'm not worried if someone doesn't understand React well or, something like that. It's the personality.
That was the easy part.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Personality is the hardest part. And so if, people are like, I'm going to do Capstone on my own, I'm like, you mean like read a bunch of books? That's totally fine. But that's not Capstone. The hard part is is the people.
Exactly. And working as a team.
Yeah. Working as a team. That's by far the hardest part. So, hey, this is great. I feel like we can just keep going here for hours. We need to turn this into a series. but so much, I think this is so like indicative of how like your communication style, there's like so much like wisdom behind like these statements that you're making, which are just like from the heart, very vulnerable. And I think it's same thing with like your technical knowledge too. I noticed this during the Python curriculum when you were giving the presentation. I'm like, she knows Python now. Or like C, right? Like you were like giving a presentation on C, and I was like, she knows C now. it was just like, I could just see that there was like, you know, the way that you communicate may be more measured, and you don't like lead with what you know, but you know a lot. And I think that's something that it needs to be emphasized as well, right? Nonetheless, I'm super, super happy that somebody that is not, you know, like the stereotype of like being successful at work, you have to be like egotistical, you have to be a psychopath, you have to be like, you're like literally the opposite of all these things. And seeing your success is so validating for me too, and hopefully for a lot of other people, that you can be a great person, make a lot of money, and have a great time at work, right? Like these are all possible.
Oh yeah. That would be very off-putting if I had a coworker like that. Like, I know I would not be able to reach out for help to that person, because I might be embarrassed or whatever it is, and I would probably avoid that person. It's almost like that at work. There's already a lot of things like stress you out at work, but that's the last thing you need is to work with someone who will make you miserable. So
yeah.
Don't be that person.
Right. Don't be that person. All right, Felicia, thank you so much again, and wish you the best. Definitely keep in touch. Maybe we'll do like an annual check-in. I don't know. We'll see.
That'd be awesome. I'm here for it.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.